Garrett Carter.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's Dan Mum here in Vegas doing the call for Rick today. We'll be starting in a couple minutes here.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? How was your weekend?
It was great. Thank you very much. Beautiful in Arizona.
Love it. Good morning, everyone. We'll be starting in 1 minute here. I know a lot of people jump on right at 8, so let's give it a minute, and then we'll get started.
Hello, it's Lynn.
Sherry Bond.
Hey, good morning, ladies. It's Dan Mum here in Vegas. I'm doing the call for Rick today. We're just getting started in a minute
okay.
here. Some more people jump
All right.
on. All right. That is enough of a grace period for the latecomers here. So just a reminder, guys, mute your phones, please, until we, unless we have some questions being asked or anything, it just makes it a little bit easier for everyone to hear. So if you don't mind just muting yourself, it makes things a lot easier. Hope everyone had a great holiday, great July 4th. Hopefully it was relaxing. We've got a great topic today, one of my favorites, something I'm very passionate about, and that's taking listings and how to increase your ratio of listings taken. So the national average, does anyone know what the national average is for the percentage of listings taken? If someone goes on 10 appointments, how many listings do they take? Feel free to unmute yourself if you know what the national average is for that number.
Two?
Yes, that's correct. It's 2 out of 10. I don't know who that was, but you are right, which is not
good.
Good.
I just was in your little thing, so I remembered.
Perfect. So, yeah, it's not good. You could very, very easily increase that number. So what we're going to be talking about today is how to increase the number of your conversion ratio, basically, of listing appointments to listings taken. And there's a few different factors here, and a lot of these you've probably heard before. Now, I wouldn't say, as I'm talking today, I wouldn't be saying to yourself, oh, I already know that. I would ask yourself, well, if you know it, are you doing it? And if you're doing it, have you mastered it? And if you've mastered it, would your results prove that you've mastered it? Because a lot of times we already know that we should be doing things, but we're not actually doing them. So there's basically 5 steps that I use to take a high number of listings. So the percentage that you should get for a good skilled agent, even if you're relatively new, if you're brand new, you should be at least getting 5 out of 10, meaning 1 out of every 2 appointments you go on, you should be getting a contract signed. If you're relatively experienced and you've been practicing and role-playing and following this process, it really should be at least 7 to 8 out of 10. Now, it shouldn't be 10 out of 10, and that surprises some people. Does anyone know why? It's an interesting question. You shouldn't, if you go on 10 appointments, you shouldn't necessarily get 10 listings signed. Does anyone know why that might be?
Oh. Unrealistic expectations of the seller?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There should be some, you should be turning down some opportunities, ultimately. If you're taking every single listing that you go on for every appointment that you go on, usually what that indicates is that you might be taking overpriced listings, you might be cutting your commission too much, you might be agreeing to do things that are unrealistic or not setting the right expectations. So in general, what most experts or coaches really recommend is that you should be getting around 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, but you should, if you're getting every single one and you're never encountering any resistance at all, you're usually not challenging yourself. You might not be having those difficult conversations that are necessary. So that's what we're shooting for, is 8 out of 10. So how do you get 8 out of 10 listing appointments to listings taken? The first step in the process, it's pretty obvious. You need to set an appointment. I'm going to go through 5 steps. The first step is you set an appointment with the seller. A quick note that I have here just for setting an appointment, you want to use times that work for you and your schedule and be disciplined in doing that. So when I ask for an appointment with someone, I give them two options. Hey, I'm available at 1 or 3. What works best for you? What you don't want to do here is, oh, yeah, I'm available at 1 or 3. What works best for you? And then the seller says, I'm not really available at those times. Can you come at 10 a.m. tomorrow? And then you say, okay. And you just get up. There's no discipline or adherence to a schedule. The schedule goes out the window, and you're so desperate for an appointment that you just drive out in the middle of when you're supposed to be generating leads or doing something else. What you want to do here is present two options, let them choose one of the two. If those options don't work, give them another two options. Okay, well, I'm available tomorrow between 2 and 4. What time works best for you tomorrow? If they're not available then, well, maybe you go to a weekend appointment. I'm available on Saturday morning. What time Saturday morning would work best for you? This is the beginning of your relationship with a potential client, and you want to be setting the right expectations. It starts right here. And if there's no adherence to a schedule, there's no expectations being set, and you're just flying off on a whim, that's when this starts, is when you're setting an appointment. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but try and maintain a good disciplined process about how you're setting your appointments. So that's the first step. That's kind of obvious. The second step is the most important step in increasing this percentage. I know you probably know what I'm going to say here, and the vast majority of agents don't do it, but the second step is pre-qualifying the seller. This is really what determines, this is the biggest factor in how many listings you sign for a given number of appointments that you go on. Now, for those of you who are relatively new to the business, when I say pre-qualify, I'm not talking about getting them financially pre-qualified. I'm talking about asking them questions about their motivation and their readiness to sign a contract and the decision makers involved, and basically their basic sales questions. How soon do you need to move? What price do you want to sell for? What price do you not want to go below? How much do you owe on the property? Are you considering doing owner financing, or do you need to cash out? Will you be ready to list your home when we meet? Are there any other decision makers involved? Are you planning to interview more than one agent for the job? How will you decide on which realtor to use? These are all basic, kind of obvious questions that need to be asked and should be asked. And where most people go wrong is most people think that sellers will not want to answer these questions, or they're afraid to ask these questions. And what's so ironic about that is that you asking these questions actually is attractive to the seller. Motivated sellers actually enjoy these conversations because it shows that you're professional. It demonstrates professionalism. It makes you look way more prepared when you're asking these questions. I've gotten listings before for one reason only, and it's because I've asked these questions. So, for example, I had a seller that was interviewing more than one agent, and I asked them, hey, have you considered doing seller financing, or did you need to cash out? And their response was, wow, that's really interesting. Like, no one else has asked me that question. We actually would consider doing owner financing if the buyer put enough money down and we did all that. And then when I went out to the listing, they said that I was the only one that asked that, and that impressed them, and they signed with me for that reason. So these questions are really important to ask. It does not make them less likely to sign with you. It doesn't make them uncomfortable. And if you're thinking that, that's purely a mindset issue. So hopefully you guys understand the beauty of me doing these calls every now and then is that I still sell real estate. I'm in the business. I'm active per year. I take about 100 listings a year. So I'm doing this every single day just like you guys are. And when it comes to these questions, out of the last 100 deals that I've closed, there was never one that I asked these questions and the sellers refused to answer. Of the ones that I've actually closed and collected a commission check on, either I asked the questions and they were happy to answer, or maybe I skipped them, but I know for a fact that if I asked them, they would have been perfectly willing to answer all of these questions. I've never had one that closed where I asked some of these questions and the sellers just refused to answer them, ever. So that should be a really big, obvious sign that you need to be pre-qualifying sellers before you meet with them. It is absolutely necessary. Sorry, go ahead. Thought there was a question there. Okay, so when it comes to pre-qualifying, just guys, make sure to mute your phones if you're not talking. It's a little bit hard here. When it comes to pre-qualifying, one thing that we need to ask, hey, there's someone that still needs to mute. Pay attention to that, please. One thing that you absolutely need to ask that a lot of agents are afraid to ask is about the pricing. and what price the seller wants to list their home for. Why do you guys think that's important?
Again, you're trying to manage their expectations and make sure they're realistic.
Right. That's a very good, valid reason. Any other ideas? There's a few different reasons.
To gauge the level of motivation.
Okay, good. So that's a really good reason. I think that's Murad. So if how is their motivation related to what they think about the price?
Very high.
No.
Because they could just have it listed really high to see what they could get and sell it for, and they're not really wanting to sell unless they get an outrageous price.
Yeah, so all of those are exactly correct. The higher they think that, the more they think the house is worth compared to the actual market value, in general, the less motivated they are, and vice versa. The more realistic their expectations are, typically the more motivated they are. This is a very ironclad rule. There's exceptions to it, but in general, that's the way this works. And one thing you really want to pay close attention to, one of the questions on the pre-qualifying script that I use the Mike Ferry one. There's tons of good pre-qualifying scripts. That's just the one that I use. But one of the most important questions, I think, is asking them a second time, basically, okay, so what price do you want to list for, and what price do you not want to go below? A lot of times when you ask that second question, you'll get some very good information. When you ask, what price do you not want to go below, a lot of times they'll say, well, it doesn't really matter. We just need to walk away with this amount, and then we'll be good. And they have this target net. And another thing that I was about to say that you want to look out for, a red flag that you want to look out for, is when a seller says something like, we'll only sell if we get this price, otherwise we won't sell. Sometimes that is just sales resistance, and they don't actually mean that, and there's some deeper motivation there, and you have to kind of filter through that. But in general, if a seller is saying that, we'll only sell if we get this price, otherwise we won't sell, that's usually an unmotivated seller. And you want to be very careful with those situations, even if you think that price is realistic. I've had this happen before where they said that to me, well, Dan, if we can get 300, we'll sell, otherwise we're going to stay here. And I was like, all right, well, 300 seems pretty reasonable, so let's do it. Guess what happens? I list it, the market changes. All of a sudden, it's worth 290, not 300. Then I have an expired listing because there's no motivation there. So we're looking for sellers who are motivated to sell for a specific reason, not just because of a given price. And that's one of the beauty. That's the beauty of asking these questions and the reasons why we do that. Last thing I'll say about pre-qualifying is that I talk to a lot of new agents who get frustrated when they aren't getting listings signed and they're going on appointments and going on appointments, and they're just getting hammered with objections. And they're talking to someone who's interviewing 82 realtors, and they want $2 million for a house that's worth $500,000, and they don't want to make a decision on the spot, and they're just getting hammered with all these objections. And they think that their problem is objection handling and practicing, and they're working on their presentation. But really the root of the issue is you're not qualifying. You don't have a motivated seller. If you have a motivated seller, the rest of this stuff is really, really easy. So I would just implore all of you, you should never go on a listing appointment until you've pre-qualified the seller 100%, no exceptions. Doesn't matter if it's a friend, doesn't matter if it's a family member, doesn't matter if it's a past client. Those are actually the most important times you should be doing this. When you start making exceptions and you do it sometimes, you slack off sometimes, you guys, for those of you who have done this before, you've probably already figured out that that doesn't work very well when you run your business based on exceptions. So that's the second step. First step is we set an appointment. Second step is we pre-qualify. Does anyone know what the third step is?
Be on time.
Third step in the listing process. That's important to be on time, but there's a step before that that I recommend that agents do. Not everyone recommends this. I really think that it helps, and that's delivering a pre-listing package. So this can be done in person or electronically through email. In person is generally better, but a pre-listing package helps to accomplish a few different things. Does anyone know what the pre-listing package does from a sales standpoint?
It gives the seller time to digest the sales price and any questions they have.
Right. So this is a huge reason. That's a great answer, by the way. This is a huge reason why agents struggle to increase their listing percentage, because think about it for you guys. If you were buying something and you have a salesperson that shows up at your house out of the blue and they want you to sign a 40-page document on the spot where you're paying someone $12,000 and you've never even read this document before, how many of you guys would be just willing, unless, now some people would, like if you're down to business and you're a driver type personality, yeah, maybe you would do that. But the vast majority of people, they're not going to sign a 40-page binding contract agreeing to pay someone $10,000, $15,000, $8,000 on the spot. Like, that's just very unrealistic to expect people to do that. You guys probably wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do it. Most people don't do it. So the purpose of the pre-listing package, and I like to be very transparent with my sellers about this. There's none of this process that I'm hiding. I'm very transparent. I think the more transparent you can be with your sales process, the better. When I'm setting an appointment with a seller, I tell them, okay, before we meet, what I'm going to do is I'll drop off a pre-listing package at your house. I know a lot of sellers have questions about how long it'll take to sell, what the best price is, what the commission is, what I'm going to do to sell your home. So what I'm going to do is drop off this package that'll have all that information. This way, when we meet, you can decide if you're comfortable and confident and we can move forward with getting the home on the market. How does that sound? Sellers love that. They love getting the information in advance. Now, the only reason you wouldn't do this, there'd really be two reasons. One, you just might not want to. Maybe you're just being lazy. I've been lazy before and didn't want to do it, and you just don't want to go through the effort of delivering it. Maybe you're afraid to deliver it. This is the more likely reason. Maybe you're afraid to deliver the information because you feel like if you show them what the house is worth, what the costs are to sell their house, and the information up front, that they won't want to list with you. Maybe that's why. So what's the problem with that line of thinking and that reasoning?
It saves you time.
You're not confident?
Yeah, so I heard it saves you time. And there's another answer in there I didn't hear. So, yeah, both of those are correct, I think, from based on what I heard. It definitely will save you time because if you think about it, and let me go back, actually. The pre-listing package, what's actually in it, it's very simple. I recommend using a very simple pre-listing package. It would include a net sheet, which shows the cost and the commission. Guys, just make sure to mute your phones. You should have a net sheet in there. You should have the comps. In my opinion, you should have the recommended price in there. And most importantly, you should have the listing contract in there as well. My personal opinion is that if you drop this information off and the seller just absolutely refuses to even meet with you after being presented with the truth about what their home is worth, it's very likely you don't have a qualified, motivated seller. I've never had that happen. If that ever happened where a seller receives the pre-listing package and they called you and said, hey, John, we don't want to meet with you because we'll never sell for that amount and that commission is way too high, so let's cancel our appointment. Usually even when that does happen, you could still overcome some of those objections, but if that were to really happen, you probably don't have a motivated, qualified seller on your hands. So I wouldn't worry about that. This will really help increase your listing percentage, and it will also help shorten down the time for your listing appointment because most of their questions are being answered in advance. It's actually better customer service than not dropping it off. You're delivering better service to this customer because they're able to review the information in advance. They're able to digest it, like you said, Murad. They're able to prepare their questions instead of just having to try and figure out their questions on the spot. It just makes them feel a lot more comfortable. Also, there's a lot of times where, not a lot of times, but there are some cases where they'll fill out the contract in advance. I've done this before, and I've shown up for an appointment, and they just left the documents on their front door. Maybe they were busy for the day and said, hey, we already signed the contract. That's pretty much it. So pre-listing package is a really important step. Don't ignore that or leave that out or neglect it. Now, after the pre-listing package, there's one other step before you meet with the seller, and that's the call to confirm your appointment. This seems obvious, but it's also what's easy to do is easy not to do, right? And a lot of times I've felt the tendency to skip it, but you don't want to skip it. So after I drop the pre-listing package off, I want to call them back to confirm the appointment. Obvious reason, and this happens all the time, is you call to confirm, and they might need to change the time for the appointment. Or another very realistic thing that happens, sometimes I'll call to confirm, and it'll be a husband and a wife, and you'll get the husband that says, oh, yeah, I'm here, but my wife's not here, but come out anyway, and just talk to me, and I'll talk to her later. Has anyone had that happen before? So what do you do in that case?
Let's go out.
Reschedule.
Yeah, I would just simply reschedule. It's very simple. And that's that should make sense to a seller if only one of them are home. Doesn't matter if it's the husband or wife or son or daughter, whatever the scenario is. If only one of them are available, it is well within your rights as a business person and a salesperson to ask both people to be there. You should do that. It's respectful for your time and their time. I can guarantee you if there's a husband and a wife and only one of them is there, the chances of you walking out with a contract signed, well, it's actually zero because the other person can't sign the contract if they're on the title. Even if they're not on the title, I would not go, even if the person that's on the title is there. I would not go. I would simply ask them. It's very easy to ask, hey, so it's best if we meet when both of you are around. Do you have any time later today or is tomorrow better? I can tell you guys from real-world experience, I've had this happen, and this will show you very clearly if you have a real appointment or a not real appointment. Because if you have a real seller, they'll understand this, and they'll say, oh, yeah, of course, my wife needs to be around. Why don't we plan for later today or tomorrow? Or some cases, less often, but sometimes, you'll have a non-motivated seller, and they'll say something like, oh, well, can't you just come out and talk to me, and then I'll talk to my wife later? Or can't you come talk to me, and I'll talk to my sister later on? That is a major red flag. What that tells me is that they've already decided on a realtor, and they probably want me to go out there just to use my rate or whatever to undercut the other agent they're talking to, or maybe they're not ready at all to sign a contract, and they're just trying to figure out what their home is worth. And you could ask them very simple questions to figure that out, and you should be very forthright and transparent in those questions. Hey, I appreciate that you want me to come out and meet with you. Both you and your wife will be deciding on the realtor that you choose, correct? Okay, so what's the time when both of you are available? And this way I can present the information and you guys can decide what's best. It's very simple to kind of maneuver through that. So that call to confirm makes you look way more professional. It helps uncover some problems. And also it draws out some of the objections in advance if they've reviewed your pre-listing package. It gives you a chance to say, hey, did you get a chance to review some of that information that I dropped off? If they say no, then I say, okay, great. It's really important that you look at that. We have a chance to look at that today or tomorrow. Sometimes they'll say, yeah, we did, and your commission's way too high, so I want to talk to you about that. Okay, great. Well, I appreciate that. One quick tip here is if you're getting objections, you don't want to be afraid of objections. You want to lean into them because they can hear what you sound like. And if they're presenting you objections and they hear you start getting all tense and nervous and anxious and defensive, you're moving backwards. So when I'm presented with objections, I want to lean into it. So if I'm calling to confirm, it'll sound like this. Hey, John, this is Dan Mum with Berkshire Hathaway. I spoke with you the other day about your house, and I dropped off that information. Just wanted to call to confirm our appointment for tomorrow at 4 p.m. Does that time still work for you? He'll say, yeah, Dan, that works, but we have to talk about your commission. It's way too high, and the price that you recommended, you know, I don't know if we're going to be willing to sell at that price. Okay, great. Well, hey, I really appreciate you bringing those things up. The price and the commission are very important to you, and I really respect that. Those will be the first things we talk about when we meet. So again, thank you for bringing that up. What else were you wondering about? This way I'm prepared for our meeting. Well, also, we don't want to do a six-month agreement because the last agent, or we heard that that's not a good thing to do. Okay, great. I'm just writing that down here. I'm taking some notes. That'll be the other thing that we talk about, the length of the agreement. Anything else that you had questions on? We want to lean into these objections rather than move away from them. That makes them feel much more comfortable. And we want to make it easy for them to bring these things up and ask us questions. Because if they're afraid to, what's going to happen is they'll say, all right, well, we're going to think about it. And then they're going to bring up these objections themselves after you leave, and then they're going to list with another agent. So we want to make it easy for them to bring these things up. Okay, so reviewing, and we're going to wrap up here in a minute. We set the appointment, pre-qualify the seller in advance, drop off a pre-listing package. That'll include the comps, the listing contract, and the net sheet. We're going to call to confirm and make sure they've received it and make sure that time still works, make sure the decision makers will still be there. I've had, by the way, speaking on that call to confirm, I've skipped that step and people have just no-showed. I've skipped that step and I showed up and there was no one there. So just for that reason on its own, you don't want to skip that call to confirm. Then the very last step is we go on the appointment. What you actually do on a listing presentation, we can't cover that all today, that we could write a book about that. But some simple steps here, or some simple tips. You want to leave plenty of time in advance for a listing presentation. This presentation, this 30 minutes, is going to determine 90% of your results for the week, or maybe even the month if you're relatively new, or more. This 30 minutes is going to determine whether or not you get paid for the month for most new agents. So I would probably make sure that you're prepared, and I would double the amount of time that it takes to get to the house. So for me, if it takes 30 minutes to get to where I'm going to leave an hour in advance. That if I'm early, I'm early. Then I have time to drive around, look at some of the houses in the area. I have plenty of time to prepare, review my scripts. You don't want to be in a hurry. It sounds crazy that I have to bring this up, but these are the basics that most people miss out on. Again, I've gotten listings because I was the only agent that was on time. As bad as that is, sellers have told me, well, the other agent was late, so yeah, that didn't go well right from the beginning. So that's just a simple tip, but we need to be reminded sometimes. The other obvious thing here is you need to be dressed professionally. Listing appointments, you need to be dressed to the nines. Whatever the maximum formality dress is, this is when it should come out. You have a seller who's going to pay you $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. Now, I know you guys might not see it that way because you say, oh, well, I have to pay my broker and I have to pay my splits and I have to pay my taxes and I have to give the agent this percentage. The sellers don't see it that way. They see a net sheet with a 6%, 7% commission. They see it as them writing you a check for 20 grand. So try and be dressed appropriately. In my opinion, I think that's important. Some agents will say, well, I'm going on a listing appointment for a $200,000 or $150,000 house, and it's not in the best area. So shouldn't I be dressed down to try and relate to the seller? And my answer is no, because they're hiring you. Someone's hiring you. They want the best person for the job. They're not looking to hire someone because they want a friend. They want to hire the best possible professional for the job of selling their home. It doesn't serve you to be underdressed here. So I would just recommend that you dress to the nines, show up on time, which is early. People ask me how early. I mean, I wouldn't knock on their door 20 minutes in advance because they might not be ready. I'd say within 5 minutes of the time that you've set would be great. And then the main thing here is keep the listing presentation short, to the point, and question-based. I have my own script that I use for my listing presentation. We could talk more about that if you guys come to my class, if you're here in Nevada. But it should be question-based. It's not about you. It's about them. And I would keep it very simple and to the point. If you're doing these steps correctly, if you've done steps 1 through 4, a listing presentation should not take that long. Of all the listing presentations that I go on, I look back at all the ones I sign. Generally, there are 20 to 30 minutes or less. All the ones that I don't sign, that I go on and I don't get, those ones all are longer, 45 minutes to an hour. So that should tell you something that if someone's ready to make a decision, you're going to figure that out in steps 1 through 4. So I hope that information is helpful for you guys. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. And yeah, that's all I got for today. Thanks for joining.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.